Time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a great show for you. Serenity Caldwell is here from iMore, filling in for Renee Ritchie. Also, Mike Hurley from Relay.fm in the UK. That's going to be a lot of fun. Andy Iannocco, too. Talk about the latest Apple news next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 441, recorded February 10th, 2015. Trolling Apple Support. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code MACBREAK at checkout to get 10% off. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you can grow and protect your wealth. Best of all, it's free. For a limited time, Twit viewers can qualify for up to $10,000 on any new account. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Cupertino. That's where Renee Ritchie is getting his secret briefing right now. So, what are you laughing at, Andy Iannocco?
You always got everybody else's back.
He didn't say so, but I'm assuming so. But we have brought in two people to replace him. So starting at my left with Mr. Andy Iannocco of the Chicago Sun-Times, of course. Can't do a show without him. Serenity Caldwell from iMore.com. Great to have you.
Great to be here.
Both of them from Boston area where the snow has reached Gronkowski plus reach heights, I'm told. That's like 8 feet high. Isn't he huge?
This is like six something feet. And then they have him reaching with the football, too. So it's like measuring up there, too.
Wow.
It's ridiculous.
Wow. I have to say, I am a fan of any team that has a guy named Gronkowski on the team. And the fact that he's a great player makes it just even better.
It's a bonus.
If you've got a name that naturally collapses with the nickname Gronk, you're definitely going to be either rugby or football. Right. There's just no way to get around it. Mm-hmm. That's divine ordinance right there.
Gronk. and if your name were spelled M-Y-K-E, you'd probably be the other kind of footballer. Mike Hurley is here, co-founder of Relay.fm. Great to have
nice
you.
To be here, Leo.
First
Thank
time.
Thank you so much.
And I see you're well-equipped with your Bob Heil arm and microphone.
Of course.
Yes.
But I'm pretending to be a pro, so I had to get the equipment.
Tell us about Relay FM.
We're a relatively new podcast network, but I've been doing this for a while. We have a bunch of shows. We have a good friend, Mr. Jason Snell, has a couple of shows on Relay. Yeah, we're kicking things off.
I hate you, I hate you. And they have a working website. Damn you. So, actually, I'm really interested in the pen addict, frankly. I'm going to start listening to that because I also am a pen addict.
Oh, you'll love it.
I love it. Pens.
It's we have a very specific but very devoted audience to that show.
I always wanted to do a pen show. That's exactly why I didn't, because I felt like it'd be very specific.
You know, there's
a small audience.
Was it like episode 80-something where you had that big roundtable debate about blue versus midnight blue ink? That was a drive wave moment because I really thought they were going to kill each other.
What kind of pen are you?
We haven't done it.
What kind of? Yeah, I'm sure they have. What kind of pen are you rocking these days?
I have it right here. My favorite at the moment is called a Twisby 540.
Oh, I want it.
I am a fountain pen guy.
Me too. Well, of course you are. You can't be a pen addict to be like a felt tip pen addict. That's silly. You have to be a fountain pen guy. That's given. What's it called again?
It's called Twisby. It's T-W-S-B-I. So it's like, I think they're from Korea or Japan.
They're inspired by writing. Oh, they're beautiful.
They are stunning.
You see, everybody is, I'm a pen addict too. Wow, look at these.
Are they all demonstrators?
Most of them are, yeah.
What's a demonstrator?
It's when you can see the ink
inside.
demonstrates the ink. Yeah,
yeah, I kind of like
they
that.
Have different fancy. Sizes. Well, I've taken over. I've been here for 5 minutes, and we're talking about pens.
I love pens.
Welcome to Mac Freak.
Pens and watches. That's it. Those are the things that matter. I have actually picked up the iPhone again because I want to prepare for the Apple Watch. So I figured by April I should be ready to actually have a, because I know I'm going to have to carry an iPhone again. You know, this isn't half bad. This is not half bad. It's funny when you don't carry an iPhone day to day, and this is the 6, not the 6 Plus, and you hold it. It's just really a remarkably well designed device, down to the glass that's kind of flowing over the sides like that. I just love this. Nicely done.
I'm doing a follow up to my iPad Air 2 review that'll probably hit either this week or next, and I just really had to. So, sometimes you find yourself facing a lead paragraph that you instinctively wanted to leave because that looks like a bus ad. But I really do have to stick to. I really do have to be honest to say that I think the iPad Air 2 is the most beautiful tech. It's the most perfect Apple product, and it's the most beautiful tech item you can buy today, and the design that flows onto the iPhone 6 is a little bit of a step down for a couple of reasons, but it's Apple just is so good at making these beautiful, beautiful objects.
Well, I think we can all agree it's the Twisby of tablets.
No, if it's transparent aluminum body, then it's definitely the Twisby.
Oh, I want a demonstrator iPad. That would be cool. See how I use the words right away? I just incorporate them into my language. Actually, germane to that point, the issue, of course, for a lot of us still is that iOS 8's a little flaky and buggy. We're now up to 1.3? I can't even keep track of the update.
8.3 or what's been seeded.
Something just came out. Yeah. The current version on my 6 is 8.13, and then I guess they're seeding 8.14 probably, but word comes out from Mark Gurman at 9 to 5 and back that iOS 9 will be what we have been saying for some time, the snow leopard of iOS. Let's fix this all now and before we add a lot of new features. Good idea, Serenity.
You know, I think that there's actually been a fair amount of improvement done in the 8-point variations. I think it's definitely a good idea to continue that improvement.
Yeah.
Especially with iOS 9. But I think the rumors of iOS 9 being exactly identical to a snow leopard type release where you have no new features, I think that might be a little hard to sell in this current current Apple economy where everybody really like, can you imagine? I mean, especially with, again, Apple's biggest quarter ever and all of that, having them come out and be like, yeah, we're not going to release any features for a year.
That's kind of an unfortunate cage, isn't it? Where
it
you're expected to be innovating constantly.
It absolutely is. And it's so frustrating because, you know, of course, when you're moving this at this faster pace, and really Apple did kind of dig themselves into a hole here by saying, we're going to release iOS updates every year and they're going to be exciting, rather than maybe we should do this every other year and give ourselves some, you know, space.
Breathing room. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But now Wall Street and, you know, its component parts expect that Apple has to release X, Y, and Z every so often. And if they don't, God forbids, you know, it's unfortunate. And they have kind of dug themselves into a hole. But, you know, I do think there's a good way to balance here where they can sell something that's a more stable update while at the same time saying, okay, you know, we have some new features too. And maybe those will implicitly play into the stability. So maybe it's extensions, but a couple new extensions so we can solidify our extensibility framework that we started with iOS 8 and build out some new things so that people aren't immediately like, oh, why isn't there new stuff?
Apple is doomed.
Exactly.
That's too bad, you know, and there's got to be some way out of that because that really, I think that really hurts you. Although I agree with you, Serenity, they have with the notches, the 8.12 and 8.13, kind of gotten rid of most of the bugs. I do wish they'd open NFC. One of the first things I do on my Android phone is I have a Sony phone that has an NFC on it, and I can tap the phone to the camera. They'll pair and copy the images off the camera to the phone, which is really handy for, you know, quick Instagramming and stuff.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, But and I thought, oh, well, this is no problem because the new iPhones have NFC, but it's locked down. Only Apple can use it. So it's a little, yeah, it's a little frustrating. Is that the, that's the kind of mini thing that an iOS, well, I'd hope they do it before 9, but that an iOS update could fix without, it wouldn't seem like.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's software. It's software related.
It's definitely software. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the real problem in that arena is security. And Apple, mm-hmm, I mean, we've seen in the past, is very, very serious about making sure that users' devices are appropriately locked down so that information just can't fly out.
Oh, but that's paranoia. I mean, we've had pairing via Bluetooth for years.
And, of course.
And why not make it easier with NFC? Just that you tap it and it says, hello, oh, you're here. Okay, I'm there.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's definitely, you know, it's definitely an option down the line, but yeah, current technology just may not be secure enough, or it may not be implemented currently in a way that Apple feels is secure enough to allow random NFC pairing. Because it, because if you think about it, like if they open that up, that that opens the doors to all kinds of uses with third party apps. It's not just, oh, tapping your camera to offload your pictures. It could be exchanging all kinds of secure information, or potentially, you know, information that needs to be secure. And if they don't have a good system for ensuring customer security, especially, again, going back to the Apple's biggest quarter ever, Apple's, you know, big target, the last thing Apple wants is a big news story that's like, yeah, NFC system compromised. NFC is also the thing that Apple Pay uses. And even though Apple Pay may not be compromised, you could see how that could very easily spin out of control into a like, oh, you know, if NFC is compromised, Apple Pay is compromised, this thing is a failure.
Yeah, I think there's also the question of style, like what features really float Apple's boat when they're putting something in. And I don't think that I don't think NFC is as interesting to them as the idea of, well, why do you have to tap to begin with? Why can't this device just simply sense the real close presence of this device and then move you forward that way?
Which is Bluetooth LE, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that works great too. I mean, it is, there are differences. I've used contactless payments with my Android phone and with an iPhone, and it really is that difference between I actually have to take my Android phone and lay it on top of, you know, the transponder that's at McDonald's or at Walgreens or whatever, whereas my phone just simply says, oh, I see that you're within like half a foot of this pay terminal. Do you want to pay using my wonderful contactless pay system? So there's a case to be made for both ways. It's also a philosophical thing where, do you want to create NFC and then say, everybody, whatever you want to do with NFC, do that thing with NFC? Or do you want to have an ecosystem where there's some measure of control, where there is a plan for how this is supposed to be used and how a customer is going to expect NFC to improve their lives? And I don't think that's not something that Apple would much rather have a story behind NFC than simply saying, yep, we put that in there. We put in wireless charging. We put in all these other things. Whatever you guys want to do with it, surprise us and please us with your inventiveness. I don't think that's Apple's way of going.
It does kind of underscore why. It reminds me why I moved to Android, because I'm anti-authoritarian by nature.
You're a rebel, Daddy.
I'm a rebel. And I just, you know, it's like, oh, hey, great. Apple finally put NFC in their phone. Oh, too bad. Only Apple can use it. It's like, you know, that's
it's interesting, Leo, that you went to that place. Like, you thought, oh, I'll just tap my camera to it and it will work. Like, it shows that you've kind of been away from the iPhone for a while.
My false expectations, huh?
Yeah.
A Scooter in our chat room is saying, I love it. I could tap my Android phone and my headphones, my Bluetooth headphones, pairs, turns them on. I'm done.
Yeah.
And you get used to features like that. Now, remember, NFC has been around for a long time. For a while, we had an NFC tag. Samsung started this NFC tag in the hallway. When people visited the studio, they could tap it with their phone, their non-iPhone, tap it with their phone, and it would launch Foursquare and check them in. Nobody ever did that. So there have been a lot of NFC features that, you know, nobody misses. But you get attached to some simple things like pairing to devices very quickly. And I mean, there's even, I think there's cars now where you tap the dashboard with your NFC.
Yeah, you can do things like that. I have, as a matter of fact, I have an NFC tag in my car, in my phone dash holder.
Yeah.
So that as soon as I don't have to do anything, mm-hmm. there's also another piece of software I put in there that says, oh, if you see this NFC tag, that means I'm in the car. So therefore, disconnect from Wi-Fi, set the launcher to this, do this, that, and the other, all stuff that I wouldn't bother to do if I had to do it all manually. But that's also not the sort of thing that, again, over the years, I'm so amazed by how much technology is controlled by the personality of that device.
Yeah.
Where the correct response to that, if you were going from an Apple perspective, is, well, but Andy had to set up that, put that tag there, and Andy had to find out the software existed, and Andy had to configure that software. We'd much rather build something so that things just work by magic, even if that means that Andy can't do that with an iPhone until, 2015, 2016, 2017.
It's just not our personality. We just don't do those things.
They have iBeacons, right? The Bluetooth low energy receivers.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting how little that's been implemented or used?
I keep going back and forth about which one I prefer. I like NFC because it is so. I like, as far as a physical user interface, I like the idea that if I bring this in contact with this, I've definitely registered here. Here's where I am. Whereas there are times when maybe something doesn't really. It's not identifying the presence of a device. I don't know. Is it because a radio is turned off? Is it because I'm not close enough? It really is a technology that has to be everywhere before it's going to be anywhere, so to speak.
It's kind of a situation where you decide that there are standards that everybody else is adopting. And then in order to – this is a weird mindset, but I think it's Apple's mindset. In order to provide value, we have to create – we have to do it our way. Because we – and is it competitive? We don't want to do what everybody else is doing because there's no differentiation. It's partly that. You can use the security excuse – but I think that's kind of a red herring. I don't think NFC is inherently insecure. I think they could make it more. But I think it really is more, it's like, well, we want to differentiate. And then it's just about competition. It's not, NFC works. It's fine. It works very well. There's no reason not to implement it, except that everybody else has implemented it.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why a phone doesn't have like an SD card slot. It's not that this isn't a good feature. It's not that there isn't a subset of people who are really going to use that. But before you decide to make that, it's not just deciding to build it. It's also deciding to support it and debug it and make sure that every subsequent release supports it. And before you undertake that kind of effort, even if you're a big company like Apple or Google or whoever, you ask yourself, are we giving a feature for people that should we put that kind of effort into a feature that we think is going to work better, that we think is going to be more harmonious with all kinds of other things that we've got planned? Or do we put in this feature that 10% of the people will absolutely love, but another 80% will be completely indifferent to, and 10% could maybe be sort of talked into it? So, I mean,
we've talked about this before. Apple also has a follow through issue. So they said, well, we're going to do beacons. We're going to do Bluetooth LE, not NFC. In order for that to be a competitive, you need to then push it. And iBeacons has just sat there. And this, it's happened again and again with Apple technologies.
You could say that Apple TV has just sort of sat there. You could also say that HealthKit has just sort of sat there, and HomeKit has just sort of sat there, although that's less of a case with those last two technologies. It's kind of okay if you put these things out there so that whatever your next step is, you know that you fixed this first step.
Yeah.
So it's they sold
74.5 million iPhones. Obviously, they're doing something right.
Exactly. And Apple TV, everything that was, by the way, last quarter.
That wasn't ever. That was
it's just amazing. Yeah. Almost everything you can point to an Apple that you could term a quote failure unquote is only a failure compared to the iPhone. Yeah. For anybody else, that would be a huge success. Right.
They're selling 10 phones a second. So obviously, whatever I care about is not mainstream enough for Apple to worry at all. Go ahead, Serenity. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, regarding iBeacons, there's a lot of tech that's been implemented, especially on the retail side. It's just, it's not sexy. So you don't hear a lot about it. You don't hear about, oh, Nordstrom's is implementing iBeacons to help its shoppers more easily. Like, those stories have been posted, and they were posted last year.
Because no one uses it.
Well, no one's just, all right, so the thing about iBeacons, though, is that they're not designed to be active things for, going back to this whole idea of Apple wants things to just work. They don't want you to actually have to actively think about tapping your phone to something. iBeacons aren't really designed so that you have to go in and like tap your phone to something.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Apple Pay, you tap your phone to something. You can't say that that's a bad thing.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
I mean that's certain... come on. You can't have it both ways. We changed the world by making it so easy to pay with Apple Pay by tapping something, but we don't want to do tapping if there's something else.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's the difference between spending, yeah, spending your money and you know, actually physically having digital goods leave your wallet versus walking into a store and getting a pop-up, for instance. You know, those little tiny icons.
Has this happened to you? You've gone into Nordstrom and things have popped up on your phone?
Not Nordstrom's per se, but like Starbucks is a great example of has the Bluetooth LE technology. If you ever see the icon in the lower left-hand corner that allows, that's like when you walk near an Apple store, you walk near, the lock screen. When you walk near an Apple store, when you walk near Starbucks, when you walk near any other retailer that has this technology implemented, it allows you to quickly launch the app. It allows you to see coupons relative to that specific store. It allows you to book a Genius appointment if you're at the Apple store. So like there are a lot of ways for the iBeacons aren't even necessarily like active features. They're basically just little locators.
Forgive me, but ugh. So my choice is between having functional NFC that I could tap on things in Bluetooth pair. I can have my camera copy phone pictures to my phone, or I can have gawk by a store and something pops up saying buy some coffee. Thank you, Apple, for really choosing the better of the two. Come on, really? Mike, weigh in on this.
Leo.
I know they are, but that my point is exactly that. Apple chose a technology that's implemented to do something for retailers but doesn't do anything for me versus something that could really do something for me, and they put it in finally, and what do they do with it? They disable it for everybody but Apple Pay.
With your phone, Leo, does it just work within the same manufacturer? So does Sony phones?
Any Android phone with NFC, and you have to have the Sony app installed, but when you tap it against the camera, the NFC chip says, launch Play Memories. Play Memories launches. The two pair, and I copy images from my phone, my Sony phone, to my Nexus 6 or whatever I'm using. It is open. It is a standard. It is used widely by a lot of manufacturers for Bluetooth pairing, if nothing else. This isn't Bluetooth. What this does is actually a little different. It establishes a transient Wi-Fi connection. Ad hoc Wi-Fi connection, copies the pictures over very rapidly, which is nice, and then disables the Wi-Fi connection, goes back, so I haven't lost my internet. It's actually very elegant.
But Serenity is absolutely right, though. I mean, there are two different technologies for two different purposes. I think that NFC is great when you really do need to have that mental process of, I want this to talk to this, so I'm going to tap them together, and they'll talk to each other. But then, I also, when I first started playing with NFC, I put NFC stickers in lots of places. I put them like the spot in my desk where I usually drop my phone. I put them in the doorway of my house so that if I wanted to do a, hey, look, hey, network, hey, phone, I'm home right now, but I almost never use them. Whereas if my Apple TV were an iBeacon and it could just simply tell that, Andy's home right now, so I'll make sure that the Nest thermostat knows that. I'll make sure that the lights are on upstairs. I'll make sure that all the other things happen. That would then be software features I would use all the time because I'm just not in the habit of gotta tap the doorway. I gotta call for an arch before I can actually use all these great features.
Well, maybe they'll build it in someday.
Yeah, there's definitely nothing
in theory
that it couldn't happen.
Maybe they'll do that someday. I mean, I have to say, there is an example, which is the Apple Wallet, which for several iterations of iPhones was completely silly, right? It was boarding passes and
passbook,
loyalty
yeah.
cards, passbook. But with the advent of Apple Wallet, suddenly, boom, 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 it's great. And we complained for years that, why can't I put credit cards in here? So finally Apple did it. So maybe iBeacon... they'll get around to it.
Yeah.
Maybe
HomeKit,
Maybe HomeKit.
Like the HomeKit stuff might be something. Because saying like going into your home and having all your lights turn on and stuff like that, you could just say, hey, Siri, I'm home, and it does a bunch of things.
Yeah.
We are going to see an 8.3 with the advent of the Apple Watch. Not only will that support Apple Watch, but there's a lot more coming. 9 to 5 Mac again. Damn that Mark Gurman. I hope Renee's getting some big briefings here.
He's just shaking his fist, being like, where are your leaks? Where is Mark getting all of
he's
this?
Got some good, he's got some good sources, I can tell you.
He just
sitting at coffee shops. You know, I think Renee's just like, I'm going to spend a whole week at coffee shops with binoculars to just look at people to see what's on their wrist, to see if they've got special shoes on.
Just follow Mark German around. That's all. So iOS 8.3 wireless CarPlay. I like it. But you think that'll be, maybe that's LE. Maybe that's... improved Google login, new emojis, and Apple Pay for China. So this has been seeded along with the 6.3 beta for Xcode and a new version of Swift, which we'll talk about in just a second. I wonder how wirelessly connecting the iPhone to the CarPlay, maybe that is iBeacon.
Well, it's that's, I believe, Bluetooth connectivity. Previous to this, any manufacturer who had CarPlay enabled, you had to physically
Plug it in. Oh, this is just Bluetooth. Yeah. Oh.
So this is the wireless version of CarPlay. So now when you get in your car, in theory, you can connect CarPlay automatically. You don't have to plug your phone into USB or anything.
Is there enough bandwidth to do? I think they must be doing an ad hoc Wi-Fi network or something, because you're going to put the screen up. You're going to have Siri. You're going to have maps. I don't think Bluetooth is going to be able to do that. Maybe it is.
Yeah, it might be ad hoc Wi-Fi. I'm not really sure about the technology behind wireless CarPlay. But either way, it's just easier for the customer and the user.
And of course, all the car manufacturers are going, oh crap. We'll have that in 4 years when we get the new models out.
One of the central things about CarPlay is so that you don't necessarily have to have a proprietary. Apple hardware. You don't need to have a special radio inside this car deck. You don't necessarily have to have a special connector. So I wouldn't be surprised if it were at least they're using. I wouldn't be surprised if they were using Bluetooth at least to initiate the connection. And after that, there is some other kind of open path. Technology they're using to maintain the stream.
Yeah, because I don't know how fast Bluetooth could go. It must go. Well, it might be fast enough. I don't know.
Well, Bluetooth 4 is not bad.
It's pretty swift. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. The logins for this is for me. I use two-factor with Google, and it is a kind of a pain. And this has been a while for other apps and other OSs to kind of adjust to the idea that you don't just do your email and your password. You also have to add a second factor. And a lot of times with Apple, I have to create a specific password. This will eliminate that, I think. The new emoji picker.
Hallelujah.
Do you use a lot of emojis, Serenity?
You know, if 2 years ago someone had said to me, you're going to really be excited about a new emoji picker, I would be like, what? But I have been using them a lot. Yeah.
I confess.
My friend got me into them. They're fun.
They're really fun. By the way, I saw a study that people who use emojis have more sex than people who don't. So that's good. That's a serious study.
Yeah, but they have emoji sex. You don't want to invite that person to your bed. Trust me.
It is interesting to see how you can pervert what would normally be just regular emojis to indicate more romantic
things.
Things. Thank you. Mike, thank you. You know where I'm going with this. So I like the new emoji picker.
Alternatives.
Yeah. Lifestyle.
I think it's actually really interesting to me because this is not exactly based off of a third-party app or third-party keyboard we saw, namely David Smith's Emoji++. Oh,
love that.
But it's a great third-party keyboard. But it shows that Apple's kind of paying attention to how people are using iOS 8 and the software within iOS 8. And they're like, yeah, you know what? Actually, our emoji picker is kind of horrible because you have to go through random tabs and it's not really... clear which icons belong to which obscurely labeled feature. So to open that all up and make it scrollable, I think, is a really awesome improvement. I mean, it sucks for David, but...
They're adding like more diversity to the emoji as well. So I think if you hold down on them, you can choose different like skin tones and stuff like that
really?
On the people.
Awesome. Yeah that's great.
That's something that Apple had been lobbying for, actually. Yeah. With like the emoji board, I'll call them. I don't know who controls that, but as well as this, seems like there's going to be more.
I think it's actually, believe it or not, part of the Unicode specific. I think that it's the people.
It is.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So they're but they only specify this is going to be a construction guy in a helmet. They don't specify how that actually looks, and so every company gets to design its own emojis. You want to be familiar. But yeah, I think that that's nice that you can choose your race instead of it all being white folks. What else? The health app in 8.3 has been updated with links to the Mayo Clinic website.
Hooray.
Congratulations.
That is
every little piece of news on a health app is such great news for people who use iPhones and for Apple. I think that if HealthKit, I don't think there's any technology that Apple's working on right now, and I include the Apple Watch, that could be as transformative as HealthKit. If it really pays off the way that they're planning it to, if 5 years from now this becomes like the central conduit for monitoring devices you have inside your house, data that the phone can collect simply by being inside someone's pocket and seeing that, oh, this person really hasn't moved much in the past 3 days, and they're usually very, very active. I wonder what's going on. Apple always talks about to one degree or another about how we're not just trying to build really successful consumer devices. We really want to improve people's lives. This will improve people's lives and extend people's lives. Yeah. Today's news isn't that big, but every brick in that wall is just making this stronger and stronger and stronger. I'm so excited about what Apple's doing with HealthKit.
And there's a big spotlight on how the Apple Watch will support this kind of stuff as well, right?
Yeah, that's another really big deal. I mean, I've not had health problems myself, but I've been the caretaker for people with health problems. And just the one feature that they're talking about is this ongoing blood glucose monitor that will require some sort of transdermal interface, because you can't do it just by sweat or just by heartbeat. Right. You really need contact to even micro blood. But the ability to not just simply, I'm going to take a reading in the morning, I'm going to take a glucose reading in the afternoon, I'm going to take a glucose reading in the evening, that's useful, but not as useful as a diabetic being able to just check the watch and saying, wow, I don't see a spike like that at 2 p.m. What did I do at 1:30 or at 1 o'clock that will cause that to do? That's how, because diabetes management is all about your behavior and doing all that sort of stuff you need to do to avoid becoming, you know, an insulin dependent diabetic. And so this is the sort of data being able to say, I'm going to get every single number over the course of the day and being able to present that in a way that you will just casually see these things, these outliers that will alert you to a problem you can solve really quickly. That's the sort of stuff that really enhances and extends people's lives.
Hey, just to get back to the really important stuff. Here's an emoji
new
table.
Crap emoji.
Screw
is
hell.
Guy named Tim. A dog crap emoji and then a bull crap emoji.
Another Brit, Tim Whitlock from London, has a page, apps.timwhitlock.info, that shows all the Unicode emojis and then the different drawings depending on native, Apple, Android, Symbola, Twitter, and Phantom. And of course, there are many others because the specification is simply, for instance, face with tears of joy. And there are different ways to implement it. And you can see how this has been implemented differently by different...
Yeah, the Android emojis are kind of obnoxious.
Well, the ones, you mean the robot ones are. I have to agree with you.
It's the Android robot.
I've never seen that. I don't know which versions of Android implement that. I've seen the second Android table, which are the more colorful. But you can see Apple's added a little whimsy to the fire engine. And the ambulance, you know, there's definitely it's fun to see. Apple's closer, I think, to the canonical emojis, the native, as Tim calls them, emojis. But here's, you know, for instance, Android, when you do a flag, Android just gives you the country code for the flag, U.S., but Apple gives you a lovely waving U.S. flag. So there's things like that. Anyway, back to the health kit. I'm sorry. The chat room just gave me this link, and I thought, oh, this is cool. Apps.timwhitlock.
No, it is cool. I mean, emojis are so interesting because I do think that, like, Serenity came around, so she came around to emojis. I'm still one generation behind because I'm still in, like, low ASCII emoji mode mentally. Like, every time I want to use that, I'm just thinking colon, close parenthesis. I'm not thinking emoji. And to a certain degree, I'm kind of resentful of the fact that, like, I never use emojis ever, and yet there's a button on the keyboard to get me direct access to that. And I would pay $18, okay, $40 to be able to switch that out with a button for a keyboard feature that I actually use.
What would it be?
I don't know. I like to make switching between keyboards easier. I would like to have like a pop-up menu of like four or five phrases that I use all the time.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah.
But it's just the difference between I never, ever, 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 ever use emojis. That's not a judgment on
me. How's your love life, Andy? I'm just curious.
Shut up.
You know, have they? Now, I just got the new update.
You know, it's left bracket number three. Okay, and has been for quite some time. Sometimes it's multiple left bracket number three.
I misstated, by the way. 8-3 is not the next one, obviously. We're at 8-1-3. 8-2 is the next one, and 8-2 is going to come out with around Apple Watch time, which is in April. And then 8-3, I don't know. But they've seeded the 8-3 for – maybe it'll come out quickly. I don't know. Why would they see – why are they seeding 8-3 now to developers when 8-2 is the next generation?
It's very odd. I can't think of another time when they've concurrently seeded two different iOS beta builds. Like they usually have the default build and then one beta ahead, but seeing two different betas is interesting. It might have to do has something to do with WatchKit. It might have something to do with HomeKit, HealthKit.
Right.
Not having dug around, nor and also being under an NDA, I can't say for sure. But
hey, does 8.1.3 help with the third party keyboards? Because I have to say, I've disabled now third-party keyboards in iOS because it just doesn't. This implementation still seems kind of wonky.
Unfortunately, we're still the tap, tap, tap. I was kind of hoping when I saw a new emoji keyboard, I'm like, maybe you can hold down and it shows you the little menu on all of the keyboards. But no. Soon. I filed a radar. Everybody who's mad at it should file radars.
Oh,
yeah.
Really? Tell us about that. Do you have to be a developer to do a radar?
You do not. Bugreport.apple.com.
Anybody? Oh, that's good.
You want to talk about NFC, Leo?
You've given me a tool. Now I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. They do keep track of your Apple ID, so I guess I can't just do whatever I want.
Willy-nilly. Yeah, you can't troll Apple support. Let them work on their actual updates, Leo.
Okay. And by the way, they're also working on iOS 8.4, according to Mark Kerman. Maybe he's gone a little too far now.
I think Mark just wants to super scoop everybody.
Look, just in case... You already know about 8.2. I know about 8.4. But this is the one that would include, perhaps...
My words. iPhone 7. This time next year, all Em was going to talk about iPhone 7. I wish I could say more, but I can't. iPhone 7.
Our Google Analytics indicate that 8.4 is well into testing. The reason is because you could see it identifies itself when visited with a website. But apparently this would be the emergence of the Beats, the new version of Beats. Although I have to say, Apple Radio, I wish more people knew about iTunes Radio. It's such a good, they do such a good job. And it's free. Yeah. It's free, right? You don't have to have Match.
Free with ads, no ads with Match, I believe.
Okay. I bought
Unless you're in the UK.
Oh, then what do you get in the UK?
We just don't have it.
You don't get anything, huh?
You get a tiny violin.
Yep. That's it. It's just a little violin icon.
There should be an emoji for that. That would be a good... There might be.
There's a violin.
Is there a little violin? Tiny violin?
Yeah. That's what gifts are for, Leo.
To be fair, you do get to watch QI without having to go through a proxy server.
Hey, wait a minute. Good news. QI is coming to BBC America. But they're not starting with season one. Bummed about that. Yeah, that's right. I'll trade you Beats Music for QI.
I actually have Beats Music. I did a little trick and turned the location off and signed up. This was before, and then when Apple took it over, they killed that.
Actually, that's going too cheap. I'll trade you iTunes Radio, Beats Music, the whole kit and caboodle for Stephen Fry. I want all of Stephen Fry.
I do have the ability to do that, so we can do it.
You know, I was really bummed. Because the Harry Potter books in the UK are read by Stephen Fry.
They're the best.
And they're so good. Now, not that Jim Dale, who does them on Audible in the US, is bad. He's great. In fact, he's often considered a legend. He does all the voices. Stephen does not quite, you know, do all the voices and stuff. But I just love Stephen Fry so much. I BitTorrented the UK version after buying the American version.
Leo.
Because I like Stephen Fry.
They are superior.
They're British.
They are. When Stephen Fry showed up at what would be the iPad announcement, I definitely had a little bit of a like, it's Hitchhiker's Guide. They're arranging Hitchhiker's Guide.
He was there. He was there, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was at the Apple Watch announcement too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he got.
He was there and
advanced.
I missed it.
Like he wrote a great article after the original iPad came out where Steve had taken him into a room and showed him the iPad before they released, before they announced it.
Yeah.
So he got to see it in advance, which is pretty sweet.
I thought that was such a fun article because Steve Jobs is the Steve Jobs of technology, but Stephen Fry is definitely the Stephen Fry of his industry too. And he was so intimidated and so, you know, I won't do the voice, of course, because only Stephen Fry is the Stephen Fry of that voice. But I couldn't believe, I was shown into this room that was like an altar. And then I was like, the air seemed different. The gravity seemed different. Steve Jobs made eye contact with me and just my vision blurred a little bit. It's like, it was amazing to see someone that is like could induce that kind of reaction in so many fans is also that big a fan of Apple that they can feel that sort of way too.
He is in apparently a little bit of hot water, isn't he, Mike, in the UK because he swore at the BAFTA Awards.
Yeah. He had this video that went out on Irish TV, I think, recently, where somebody asked him what he thought of God, and that's interesting.
It's the question was like, if you met God, what would you say to him? And his answer was along
has
the line.
It was
such a cool like intellectual response. Well, I would say, how dare you give kids bone cancer? How dare you do this? How dare you do that?
Yeah. Always a challenge.
And some people he really, were upset really went.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Emojis always derail this show, by the way. I just want to say. In fact, Twitter has been derailed many times by emojis in general. OS X this is another issue because those of you who are using the new OS X cannot speak about it. It's like Fight Club. You cannot speak about the new OS X, but I think that you, Serenity, and Renee did an article about the new Photos app in OS X, right?
We did.
You can talk about that.
We can definitely talk about that.
Let's take a break and come back. I want to talk about that because Apple, as you know, is Aperture's dead. iPhoto is now dead, and Photos is the new thing. If you're on iOS, you see Photos on iOS, but this is the new desktop Photos, and we'll have some implications for iOS as well. We'll talk about that. In just a bit, this is OS 10.10.3, I think. But first, a word from Squarespace. Squarespace 7, the newest Squarespace, is gorgeous. It's simple, it's easy to use, and they've really made it even more powerful. You can change your site. No more, you know, kind of separation between edit and preview mode. You're looking at the changes as you go. And if you just go to squarespace.com, you'll see the gorgeous array of things you can do. In fact, click that Get Started button, and you have 2 weeks, no credit card needed, 2 weeks to play with the templates, import some of your data from your existing site, get an idea of what your site might look like on Squarespace. Elegant, beautiful templates. And I always, you know, I talk about the content management system, but let's not forget the best hosting, too. They're all part and parcel of the same thing. Look how good it looks on an iPhone. It looks great on a 27-inch screen. It looks great on a 55-inch screen because all Squarespace sites are responsive. That means they work on any size screen. There's no longer is there a difference between your mobile version and your desktop version. It just all looks great. Incredible 24/7 customer support. Even if you're just doing the free trial, they're very helpful. And they're always there from the Squarespace offices in New York City. And it starts at just $8 a month. That includes hosting. When you sign up for a year, it includes your domain name. They hook it all up for you. And, of course, it includes that great support. E-commerce. Every website has built-in e-commerce. With cover pages, it's a snap to set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. Create a quick landing page for your brand, your personal identity to promote a new product. And that's all part of your Squarespace account. Start it today by just doing that trial. You don't need a credit card. You don't need our offer code. Just go to squarespace.com. But when you do sign up, when you decide to pay, you'll get 10% off when you use the offer code MacBreak. 10% off when you use the offer code MacBreak. Squarespace. Build it beautiful at squarespace.com. It sounded like from your review, Serenity, that Photos is kind of midway between iPhoto and Aperture.
Yeah,
fair?
And so we did a first look and then also a pretty in-depth FAQ on the beta, which I should stress is very much a beta.
Yeah.
It's not in final form yet, although there might be a public beta coming out later this year before they release officially in spring. It's very much, it reminds me of Apple's other redesigns of its consumer level apps, which is at its very basic, it's very simplified. It has all the things you come to expect from iOS. You know, you've got your moments, you've got your collections, you've got albums. But it also has some traditional longstanding iPhoto features like faces. It can import your Aperture and iPhoto libraries. And it has these incredible editing tools, which on their head, on their face are very simplified, but you can add, you can basically drop down, you know, the light, the color, the black and white sliders to get much more detailed sliders and much more detailed information. You can add previously what we would consider high level prosumer to professional tools, like histograms and levels and white balance, things like that, that most people would never play with, but are available to the people who need them. And then, of course, you still have the great the photo, the projects and prints and all of that stuff that you've come to expect from iPhoto. It's an interesting balance between what we consider from what we, you know, what we've gotten used to with iPhoto and the high level stuff that Aperture provided. It definitely doesn't have everything that Aperture provided. It's missing a lot of stuff, including like the loop. It doesn't have brushes.
It doesn't have the loop. So there's no close up view, huh?
Well, there's no superimposed, but the Photos app...
You can't zoom in.
Well, yeah, you can. Yeah. The Photos app includes all the same gestures that you've kind of gotten used to doing on OS or on iOS.
Oh, so you could kind of pinch and...
Exactly. Yeah. You can pinch to zoom. You can scroll really simply.
That's better than a loop, frankly. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, you know, the loop is a fun tool and everything. And I understand why people use it for color correction and the like. But there's a lot of stuff built in here. Even though it looks simple on its front side, there's a lot in here to empower users and to really allow them to kind of dig in and play with their photos and make beautiful stuff in a way that I feel like iPhoto was kind of limited, where you were either a bare bones user who didn't know anything about photos and you're just like, enhance tool, red eye tool, and then you were done. Right. Whereas I think the Photos app actually gives you more control of what your photos look like because it has filters, which everybody, you know, who uses Instagram is comfortable with. And it also has these really simple color correction tools, which is just like dragging a slider one way or the other. And if you want to learn to play more with that, you can, or if you already know how to play with that kind of stuff, you can hit the drop-down menu and have access to all of these sliders, or you can turn on your histogram, or you can add a vignette to your photos in a really, really simple, really easy manner. And I appreciate the sort of stacked way that they've built this. It's the same thing with organization too. People look at the Photos app and the screenshots of the Photos app and they panic because they're like, oh, well, you know, I had an iPhoto library that was organized, and my Aperture library, I had folders. And all of like the folders still exist. Folders actually exist in a much better way than I think they used to. But it's kind of hidden in the menus. So you don't have to worry about folders unless it's something that matters to you. You don't have to worry about having sidebar clutter unless it's something that appeals to you. Say, like if you want a sidebar of all of your recent events and photos and moments, et cetera, you can have that. If you don't, you can just use the top bar navigation that Apple has default in the Photos app. It's more flexible to fit to individual users. But pro users, it's definitely not, it reminds me a lot of Final Cut Pro 10 in that way, where it's very bare bones for pro users. The basic management organization is there, and the basic sort of prosumer editing tools are there, but you're missing a lot of the things that kind of are like pseudo Photoshop tools that were hidden in Aperture. And you're missing kind of the super high level management. And I don't think that will never reappear. In fact, I really like Photos has been built in a really strong code. Like the core code base feels solid and feels fast, which is such a dramatic difference from iPhoto that it makes me really happy with all the memory leaks. But I don't think that stuff will never like never reappear. I think we are looking at updates. You know, when Aperture was discontinued, Apple did say that they would be allowing third-party plugins. So we will hopefully see that down the line.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we could... Everybody's panicking. Well, like the Aperture users are panicking because they're like, Apple,
they're not panicking. They've all moved to Lightroom.
Yeah, if they have some, we got plenty of complaints on iMore being like, Apple's abandoned me and I hate Lightroom and what am I supposed to do?
I'm sorry.
Exactly. Like you either move to Lightroom. If you're a true professional and you need those tools, Lightroom is kind of one of your main options, but Aperture still works. If you really are committed to this, and in fact, when you
is Aperture compatible with Photos?
In a way,
because remember they moved the iPhoto library to be the same as the Aperture library, so that you had this nice back and forth. Does the same thing happen with Photos, or is it a new library format?
It is a new library format, but it doesn't convert your old library. So you can have two basically side-by-side libraries, which is not a perfect implementation. They had to rewrite the entire library code because of the way that the Photos app was, because they had to rebuild the Photos app and they had to re-engineer it for cloud-based photo.
This is not the first time we've been to this rodeo, right? I mean, this is what they've been doing all along. Yeah. They've done it with every pro app.
Exactly.
You talk a little bit about in the iMore show about this issue that Apple has, where they had two tracks. They had pro and consumer versions, and it sounds like at least with Photos, they're kind of moving to this middle ground, this prosumer ground.
Yeah, well, I feel like they've been doing that actually with all of their previously consumer-faced applications as well. The iMovie redesign is a great example of something that started in a completely consumer, like bare bones thing, and got a lot of people who were using iMovie as a prosumer tool really mad.
Right.
Because they're like, well, I was able to create all these little fiddly bits and make iMovie work the way I wanted it to. Now I have to upgrade to Final Cut. Oh, I'm throwing this table over. but as iMovie progressed throughout the years, they really tried to make it this wonderful scaling middle ground where if you could come in as a complete bare bones brand new user and make a movie in iMovie in a couple hours. Or you could come in as somebody who's had some familiarity with iMovie or some familiarity with video editing and get quite a lot out of an iMovie project. It's a little bit of rejiggering of the brain. And in a way, especially with you take iMovie and Final Cut, they both use and implement very similar nonlinear editing tools. So once you've kind of capped out where iMovie stops, you can jump over to Final Cut with very little abrasion. You know, it's whereas before the old version of iMovie, once you stopped understanding iMovie, when you jumped into Final Cut, it was like going from a kiddie pool to going to the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, where you're like, well, I think I know how to swim, but all of my limbs are different, and the water temperature is different, and it's salty. Like it was a completely different experience. Speaking as somebody who did that back in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was very difficult. And I think what they've been doing with iMovie, what they've been doing with the Pages, the iWork suite, and now what they're doing with Photos is creating this application that can serve the needs of multiple users. However, there's going to be an end cap there, because when you talk about serving multiple masters, like for one thing, Apple is going to serve the majority of its consumer base. Like if the majority of people buying Macs and using their software are slightly newer to prosumer users, they're going to have to serve that base because that is the base that is giving them money. Conversely, you know, they have their pro markets, but the pro markets are unfortunately small potatoes in respect, which is not to say that I think Apple disrespects professionals or that Apple doesn't care about its professional market. It doesn't want their professional market to come back in the future. But I don't think like when you lay out a timeline of we have these 20 projects currently in development, which things are top priority? I unfortunately think that, you know, iMovie was developed before Final Cut, and Final Cut had kind of the space to be reinvented. I don't think Aperture had the same kind of space, whereas basically they kind of made the decision to transfer everything over to cloud-based photography around the same time. So it was basically, well, we can't really keep supporting Aperture because then we'd need to tear out a whole hunk of Aperture and try and sort of cram in the cloud photography aspect, and it wouldn't really work for what we're trying to do with reinventing photos. So we might as well tear the entire building down at once, put out this product, and then see what happens. And again, that's speculation on my part. I mean, it's to be determined whether Apple will ever resuscitate or reinvent Aperture, or whether they just want to keep photos around as kind of their core product and then have third parties augment the things that you would previously find in sort of a higher class professional editing and management app.
One of the issues that comes up, and this is really what pros care a lot about, is the support for the RAW formats, especially as new cameras come out. Adobe keeps us up to date with Adobe Camera Raw, which updates whenever Lightroom's updated and many times in between. Apple has, I always see these Camera Raw updates being pushed out in Apple updates. But if they are no longer are supporting pros, I wonder if they will continue. Have they said anything about supporting Camera Raw?
Yeah, absolutely. Raw is supported both locally and in iCloud.
And they will continue to update it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So okay. When I say that it's not that Photos app is not a pro app, I don't necessarily mean that it's just a newbie app either. It's very much a prosumer app.
I think there are a lot of people, even pros, would use this for the quick and dirty stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I watched Lisa, who's really an accomplished photographer, but not a pro, but very serious about her photography. And while, you know, we keep working at Lightroom and she's taken Linda classes on Lightroom and stuff, she still does iPhotos almost all the time. And I think something like Photos would actually suit her and the broad mass of users who have become more serious about photography but don't yet really want to spend the time and energy to learn something like Lightroom. It might actually suit them quite well. It does. It probably would do almost everything they need to do. You agree, Andy? You're in that group, Andy. You're absolutely in that group.
You're speaking as somebody who absolutely loves Aperture, who's now trying to figure out: am I going to have to stick with Aperture because I love it? I know how to use it. So I'm not happy by Apple dropping support by Aperture, but nonetheless, you look at Photos and you realize that this is rebuilding Photos for the way that people actually use Photos these days. Mm-hmm. They're not doing stuff for print. They're not doing stuff for even to make a print and hang it on the wall. They're really all about taking a picture on their phone, making it look more interesting, however you want to define that, and then putting it in a place where they can then show it off to other people, usually in some sort of a digital format. And this is brilliant at that, for in terms of management, in terms of making sure that wherever you shoot it, you edit it on your desktop and you don't have to resync anything. It's just simply the next time you look at it on your phone, it will have all of those edits to it. Also, most people, they really just want an answer to the problem of how do I make this picture look better? And in Aperture, my instinct is, oh, well, gee, there's the I was looking at a shot of the Lincoln Memorial at dusk that I shot a couple months ago, and the white balance is pretty good, except for there's one light that's kind of uplighting it. That's like a mercury light or something, a little bit of a green tint. I know how to dig deep into the Aperture's controls so that I can just simply say, whatever is that shade of green, please make it a shade of this instead. Most people aren't looking for that sort of stuff. They just want, how do I make this better? And when you look at the way that Apple has changed the interface, it's deceptive, kind of like what Srini was talking about. You think that they've just made a brightness slider, which we've seen for the past 15 or 20 years, but it's kind of like how a car has active suspension, where you tell the car, hi, car, I would now like to turn sharply to the right now, but there's a computer somewhere inside the car that says, I bet he didn't mean I'd like to spin around 3 times, then crash through that guardrail. It automatically decides, how do I execute that in a way that's going to please the user. So now if you decide I want to make this brighter, you slide it all the way up to the left, but Photos understands that I bet he didn't mean I want you to make it so bright that the entire sky is bleached out white and we can't see any of the clouds. So it makes all these really intelligent adjustments that are going to make people really, really happy. And it's also important to note that this is not just a new version. This is not just an upgrade of iPhoto. Apple really is completely creating a brand new architecture for how all of Apple products deal with Photos. And this is just the first articulation of that entire system. And just like with Final Cut, there are a lot of things that Final Cut X, Final Cut Pro, I can't remember whether they're calling it Final Cut 10 or Final Cut X. Thank you very much. Because I remember having a conversation with somebody fairly high up of correcting me about, you're saying Mac OS X. It should be Mac OS 10. Anyway, but just like when Apple reinvented that, it didn't do half of what it does right now. And it wasn't because the pro users complained so long and so hard that they were forced to reverse decisions, because the 1.0 they released was what they were able to release at that time, and there was always a desire to extend it and expand it and fill in some of these gaps. So I'm sure that a year from now and 2 years from now, this is going to be a lot more capable than it is when it will be when it ships to consumers.
Do you think Apple's thinking maybe we should do middle? You know, of course, I look at GarageBand to Logic Pro, and Logic Pro is Pro, and Final Cut is Pro. But do you think Apple's maybe thinking we should leave the high end to third parties and make good, solid consumer products that can get take you all the way up to prosumer, and then just assume that if that smaller market, that pro, or does Apple really still want to that own that pro market?
I don't think they necessarily need to control that market. Whereas by virtue of the fact that
I would think that creating an ecosystem where many companies can contribute would be better than having Apple be the sole source of pro. And that was Steve Jobs who said, screw you, Adobe. We're going to own the top high end. Right. And that, and again, we're in the post Jobs era.
And you know, the popularity of Apple's answer to Photoshop is, you know, it's all around us. But the only problem with that, though, is that, Whoever wants to make the next version, something, the thing that replaces Aperture, is now going to be competing with Adobe. And Lightroom is a wonderful app, but it has the limitation that it is multi-platform, which means that it is never going to be one of those instinctive macOS apps that takes advantage of every one of these really wonderful APIs across iOS and macOS. So the pro tool that is going to be available to the people who really are that serious about photos is always going to be such an easy way to switch from one platform to the other. Because if somebody comes out with a really good multi-purpose tablet for Windows, or if there's just a solution that they like more, if there's a future of Windows 10 or Windows 11 they like, the problem of, well, what the hell do I do with my photo library will not be an issue because this is multi-platform. They just simply move it from one place to another because it's on the cloud. Maybe they don't have to bother at all. So I do think that Apple's not quite as aggressive about saying, hey, we make things that everybody can use. I think they really are saying, we know where our bread is buttered, or maybe less snarky way of saying it is that we know what we do exceptionally well. We know the products that we make that people really respond to very strongly. We're going to pursue that very, very aggressively. We're not going to ignore pro users, but if we can make our target audience happier and limit ourselves to just not shouting out, not shutting down responses and opportunities for the pros, that's what we're going to do. The pros will figure things out because that's why they're pros.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think you nailed it, Serenity. If they offer, as long as they continue to support raw image in the operating system, that's great. That means I can import my pictures for instance, my Sony A7, and it reads it no problem. And then they allow, and we'll watch with interest to see what Photos allows. But if they allow plugins, that really gives you a lot of headroom for prosumers. And then if somebody wants to use Lightroom, or somebody else wants to come along and create a Lightroom like program, I think almost all the professional photographers I know use Macs.
It's a good platform. And also, I mean, it's, for some reason there's been this, I personally prefer Apple laptops to PCs, but there has been sort of a movement just among creative professionals for OS X and Mac related items.
And for photography, the screens are better. I think the 5K iMac is a photographer's dream, I would say. It just seems like that's where the market's going. I don't know you well enough, Mike, to know. Are you into photography?
No, this is why I've been so quiet. I'm very consumer when it comes to photography, which is why the Photos app is interesting to me, because it's kind of like the main interface that I have with Photos is my iOS photo app, right? That's what I'm used to seeing the most, because that's the camera that I use. The thing that interests me the most about all of this is the photos in the cloud and how that's going to work, because I think there's a lot of interesting parts of how something like that could work. No company has really been able to do it sustainably at scale, like all of the startups that opened, like Everpix, and there was one,
Loom.
What was the one that just closed?
I loved Everpix. Loom, so sad. Dotball, yeah.
And Picture Life.
There was Picture Life just got acquired. Like, no company has been able to do it successfully and sustainably. In theory, Apple could do it, right? Because they can subsidize the cost with the hardware.
Well, you know who does it really well as well is Google.
Yeah, they do.
Do you use Google Plus for your iPhone backups and stuff?
No, I actually
love it.
I, I, I back up all my photos to Dropbox, which is a
Dropbox
not
does
a great
it too.
Solution.
And they've got the new Carousel. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carousel.
So I'm
is not
I'm interested.
Bad.
No.
So let's talk about the iOS integration with Photos, because you touched on this too, Serenity, in your iMore review. We already have Photos on iOS 8, but it's going to gain new superpowers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the biggest draw to having a Photos app on the Mac is integration and wireless syncing between your Mac and your iOS devices. If you take a lot of photos on your iOS device and you're somebody who takes photos of the DSLR like I am, like I think a lot of people are, still, this allows you to kind of combine those libraries and have those libraries at your fingertips at a glance. You don't have to worry anymore, in theory, about, you know, connecting your phone to your Mac, syncing the very specific albums that you want to showcase when you're on the road, and then also having to deal with managing your camera roll and backing up your camera roll and making sure no pictures get lost. In theory, everything should work seamlessly. So whether you take a photo on your iOS device or on your Mac, whether you delete a photo on your iOS or device or your Mac, whether you add an album on your Mac or your iOS device, everything gets synced. Everything is working in tandem with each other. Now, in the beta, that's not 100% true. There's some quirks with albums right now, and everything's not syncing perfectly. But again, it's a developer beta. Right. I'm not surprised that things aren't working magically. But they're pretty close. They're about 85% there, I'd say, to the point where, again, we've seen Apple do this with PhotoStream. So we know that Apple has the ability to at least sync the last 1,000 photos without too much trouble. And they haven't had a lot of major bugs with that. So it's just a matter of them being able to intelligently manage your library between iOS and Mac and sync the photos together and make sure there aren't duplicates or missed information, lost information. Because, I mean, I think that's the big key. And what Mike was talking about a little bit is, like, all the startups, everything else. My big concern was always, you know, well, I want to upload my photos to the cloud. I want a backup, but I also want to make sure that I don't lose them or that they don't accidentally disappear, you know, into the cloud, or I don't accidentally duplicate 3,000 photos, and then I have to go through and clear them out automatically. So there's that. And then there's also the fact that Apple's managing space intelligently on both your iOS devices and your Mac, where it's pulling down a percentage of your photos, both on your mobile devices and your desktop devices, but a percentage relative to how much free hard drive space you have. So it's not like, oh, I have to store 100 gigabytes of photos locally and then take up all of my hard drive space. It's okay, you have 60 gigabytes free on your hard drive. We're going to use 20 gigabytes for photos. And if you use up more of your hard drive, that space will shrink and we'll keep everything else on the in the cloud, but with local previews. So you can figure out, oh, low, you know, tiny little pictures that you can blow up. And then if you want to edit it, it seamlessly pulls it down from the cloud and says, here you go, here's this photo. And then as soon as you edit it, it goes to your iOS device.
Yeah, see, whilst that sounds like a good function, right, so you're not taking up all your hard drive space, that is what in turn terrifies me.
Because stuff will be just disappearing.
Yeah, well, it's the idea that even if it doesn't look like it is, there's like the system is deciding what it thinks I should have. And if there are problems with the backup, then what? Like, where did I go? Like, if I mean, there's nothing to say Apple can't do this. But if they can't do this, and this is the system that they take us down, that is a potential minefield.
Yeah,
that's what worries me. It's actually very dangerous.
My difficulty, there are a few difficulties with Apple as I perceive them. One of them is that they're really, really good if you're the kind of user that they imagine you to be. If you're not the kind of user you imagine them to be, that's where you have the potential to have some bad experiences. And I like the fact that you're getting a terabyte of storage. That's enough for a couple hundred thousand photos at the very least. But the first time it loses the first time that there's a really important picture, and we're not talking about a product shot of an Apple rollout, I'm talking about the last like Christmas I had with a family member before they died.
Yeah,
the first time I can't find that.
Yeah,
and that's the last time I ever use that service again. And I think that a lot of people are going to be in the same boat. This is a really, really high degree of difficulty for Apple to execute.
It's yeah, because every time you notice something lost, like in your photo library, the things that you notice that are lost are the important ones. Like the unimportant pictures, you don't notice that they're gone. And every single time this happens to someone, it's a disaster for that person. Like it's a thing that needs to be tackled to advance us further into the cloud, but it's a really dangerous one to try and get right. And it must be extremely difficult. And I'm sure it's why they're spending billions of dollars on more data centers, right? To store all of these photos.
Most recently, converting that Sapphire plant to a data center for $2 billion. Our show brought to you by LegalZoom.com, a great place to go to save on your legal needs, but also to get the legal help you need. LegalZoom, I want to make this clear, they're not a law firm. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. But so many things you do don't need a lawyer. If you're getting your life organized for 2015, start by protecting your family. If you haven't done this yet, please, please go there. Make a will. You can also make a legal trust. Durable power of attorney for healthcare, a healthcare directive. That would be really good to do. Even if you don't have next of kin, you should have a healthcare power of attorney. All of this stuff can be done easily, simply, quickly, and affordably at LegalZoom.com. Now, you got your family all together. How about your business? Do you have a trademark on your brand? Are you incorporated? Do you have an LLC? We talked to Ron Wayne a few triangulations ago. The guy who helped Jobs and Wozniak found Apple Computer, and he dropped out, he said, because they weren't a limited liability company. He said they didn't incorporate. And I knew, as the only guy with assets in that trio, that if Apple got sued, I'd be the one to pay. I didn't want to lose my house. Don't lose your house. Make an LLC. Make a Chapter S. See, if LegalZoom had been around back then, it had been a simple thing to do. Just create your corporation. For more than 10 years, LegalZoom has helped millions of people get the personalized attention they need. And by the way, don't feel like you can't get an attorney's advice, because they can connect you with an independent attorney in many states. They're not a law firm, but the LegalZoom plan, pre-negotiated rates, you can see the attorney's profiles, unedited reviews from LegalZoom customers, pick the attorney that's right for you. So it's not unusual that you're filling out this happened to me. I was filling out the LLC papers with LegalZoom way back 10 years ago now. And I thought, Delaware or California, which should I? And if they'd had a legal plan, I would have called an attorney. It's nice to have that. Don't let another year pass you by before you get your life in order. For family, for business, for legal help you can count on for your life, go to LegalZoom.com. I do invite you, when you buy, to use the offer code MBW for MacBreak Weekly, right? MBW, and you'll get $10 off at checkout. LegalZoom. Let's talk a little more about Beats. One of the questions everybody has been asking is if Apple rebrands Beats, redesigns Beats, the music streaming music service, do they put it on Android or do they just make it for iPhone? And Lisa DiCicco, who is writing for Business Insider, says Apple is reportedly working on an Android app. Actually, she's quoting Mark Gurman. I'm just trying to keep Mark out of the conversation.
Impossible. It's impossible.
Mark even has a new picture of Dre and Jimmy Iovine. Wow. And Eddie Q looking very much like a mobster in that picture. If they rebrand this, yes, they will, of course, according to Mark Gurman, do an Android app. They're not going to get out of that market, although I guess you have to, right? If you want to have a music service that reaches everybody, you can't leave half of the world out.
Yeah, I mean, especially because Beats has the customer base already.
Yeah.
It may be something that Apple wants to, dislude, but we have iTunes for Windows. Like, it's not a...
Remember, that was a fight, though. Jobs did not want to do a Windows version of iTunes. He was convinced.
It was a fight.
Yeah.
But once it happened, they were very grateful to do it because that's one of the main reasons the iTunes Music Store grew so fantastically. Right. Like, the Mac market at that point was minuscule, was tiny. It wouldn't have sold all of those songs, but with Windows, they managed to do that. So I'm not surprised at all to hear that Apple's developing potentially an Android app. I mean, I feel like Apple's probably developed a lot of Android apps that have never seen the light of day, being like, hey, let's see if this makes sense. Let's see if that makes sense. And at the end of the day, there's probably some executive saying, nope, sorry, we're not doing that. Throw it away. Never see the light of day.
I'm very sorry to say, you Windows Phones users, Apple has no plans, according to Gurman, to do a Windows Phone version, even though Beats was available on Windows Phone. They're not going to.
The thing that I find really interesting about this and the way that Mark has reported it is that Apple are not actually planning on rebranding Beats. Like, they are going to create another set of applications that takes from Beats and takes from iTunes and will become this new Apple Music streaming service. Because he talks about how you can import your playlists and your library into this new app. It's just very interesting to me that they're creating another brand, and they may potentially get rid of the Beats Music brand, which I think is another issue. But it's very peculiar to me that I think that they're going down this route. They're like, we're going to create something completely different, right, and we're going to create an iOS app and an Android app.
According to Gurman, it's not going all that well. He says one source told us that the, quote, Beats integration is not going so well. Another source said development of a new service has been a mess. Another source warned that significant employee departures from Apple's services divisions could be in sight. Lack of clarity from Apple executives over the direction of the project has put the timeline in jeopardy. So we shall see. It's not like the world is clamoring for a new music service. There are plenty, and there are more coming out all the time as Apple pauses and works on this.
But it's so clearly where everybody is going. I mean, there's so many different there's so many topics in tech where you realize that the people you're making money from now, they're going to get old and they're going to die, and the service that you have is completely irrelevant to the people who are now 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, who are now going to be in a few years, they're going to have like good paying jobs and no kids, which means a lot of money to spend on discretionary items. And so you got to have a service where that's going to speak to those people.
And of course, someday it'll be available in the UK, Mike.
See, that's how these things
but
work.
You have Spotify, right?
Yeah, but so do you now.
Well,
we
so
did
do
have
you.
It for a long time.
So do you.
For a long time.
But I would argue that Spotify, RDO, what are the choices in the UK?
We have Spotify, RDO, and then Deezer.
Deezer. And then Deezer does high quality as well. I can't remember. Do they own Tidal, or is Tidal a separate? Because Tidal's the new CD-based streaming service, CD quality streaming service.
Isn't that the one that Jay-Z just bought?
Jay-Z just bought it?
Yeah. I'm sure Jay-Z bought a music streaming service, think it was Tidal.
It'd be nice to have so much money. TidalHiFi.com. I've been listening to Tidal. I don't know. I mean, you could argue, who knows the difference between CD quality and MP3.
Jay-Z
owns it.
It was about a week ago. Yeah, he bought Tidal.
Wow, I like Tidal. I really do. But these are all the same. And by the way, they use Apple Lossless on iOS, FLAC on everywhere except iOS. Interesting. It's hard to differentiate these days.
It's catalog, basically.
Yeah, and they're all roughly the same, aren't they?
Catalog and curation.
Yeah, it's curation and discovery, and that's what Beats is all about, right? You make that sentence. I want to listen to dubstep while jamming on the golf course with Jay-Z, and then it will give you something.
Yeah, what
the
I really
thing
like
about Beats.
I bet we're probably about to say the same thing, Mike. The personal the personal playlists that their staff are curating, basically. Yes.
But RDO does a great job with that. Spotify has
they're not as good. They're really not as good. No, Beats have like an entire editorial staff that look after this sort of stuff, and they create excellent playlists. Even like they do some that they analyze what you're listening to, and they suggest like starter playlists for certain bands. Like, oh, we can see you like alternative rock. Here's a start playlist for the White Stripes, which is a band that we think that you'll like. And then they have like deep cuts. So like the album, best album tracks and stuff like that. They have really, really great playlists.
They administer the local before the general anesthesia.
So Jay-Z bought Tidal and Wimp, which are both run by a Swedish company called Aspiro AB. Wimp is in Norway. It's only available in Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Germany, and Poland. And then in the U.S. and the U.K. is Tidal. I like Tidal, but it's $20 a month. It's twice as much. Apple also rumored to say to be launching the new service, whatever they call it, for less than the $10 that everybody else is charging. Maybe
like $7, right? Or something like that, I think.
Yeah. They
makes sense.
They floated $5. But then you watch the Grammys on Sunday, and it basically there was a, you know, 10-minute segment devoted to screw you thieves, stop stealing our music, and we're going to Washington D.C. and we're going to make sure Congress helps. And
I thought the subtext there is, yeah, we're never going to let Sgt. Pepper get into the public domain, so you may as well just stop even asking about that.
They tipped the hat to two artists who have been in the forefront here, the Turtles, and of course the Turtles sued because these streaming music services were using loopholes in copyright law that let them have anything pre 1972 royalty free. Turtles sued. And then they said, and a tip of the hat to Taylor Swift. Well, what is Taylor Swift famous for? Pulling her album off Spotify. So it's pretty clear that they're, at least from the point of view, and by the way, lots of shots of artists in the audience going, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the music industry is clear that they just basically say, anybody who screws with us, we're going to screw with you. And it's not just piracy. It's streaming music. It's Spotify. And we're going to go to Congress to make sure that that doesn't happen. Yeah.
Whatever you do, like, don't let your customers choose.
Yeah,
you
heaven know? For
just,
fan.
Just don't
yeah.
allow that.
Heaven for fan.
There's such weakness in the way they're running their businesses now, because now if it's still terribly unlikely you'll become a success as a musician. That thing has never changed. But now you can become a really big success as a musician, not by getting a record deal, but by simply having a YouTube presence. You can have there are people that you've never heard of who are not even allowed to park cars at the Grammys, who have tens of millions of YouTube channel subscribers, who can sell things directly to these people where right. they can make almost as much money that way as a success that as you could like as by having an actual record deal. And so this is why a lot of these groups don't want their music on Spotify, because why would I settle for getting a fraction of a penny for every one of my fans when I can just have them, I can just talk to them directly and they'll be happy to give me $5 for a whole album or $20 to $30 for a concert ticket. That's you look at the way that Spotify streaming revenue breaks down and it's like, wow, why would you want to? How does this work out for you as a performer?
Well, it's a discovery thing. You could say this. You can make the same argument. Why would I want to ever be on radio? And by the way, that's the whole issue. Is they don't want another radio. We got radio. We don't need another radio. Yeah. But that's how kids don't listen to the radio. Come on.
They like to share their music with other people. That's one of the I keep thinking that the reason why Spotify is such a hit isn't because a minimum amount of money and then you get all you can eat. It's that it's so easy to say, this song is awesome. Here, you should listen to it. Here's the entire track. And you can do that by sharing a Spotify link. If you have another system where you yourself are deciding to put this on another music service or Bandcamp or SoundCloud, why do you need to sign a contract with Spotify? Why do you need to suffer with the new music terms that Google is putting YouTube musicians under? It seems like a system that's close to the point where either this big herd of musicians starts to break apart and scatter to every hill and dale where the music industry can't really make any money off of them, or they figure out a way to make this herd happy and get them to stick together so they can get their 10 to 20%.
I mean, I'm watching the Grammys and I'm thinking it's just a bunch of guys trying to people who run labels trying to make sure that their profits are protected by Congress. Yeah. And it's... So there was a study, Ernst & Young did a study on streaming systems. They studied Deezer and Spotify. Get this. Because, by the way, the CEO of Pandora and I think of Spotify both have said, we pay a lot of money, billions every year, in royalties. Where does it go? Well, 45.6% goes to the artist's record label. The streaming service gets about 21%, only about a fifth of the revenue, less than Apple gets, I might add. 17% taxes, songwriters and publishers 10%, the artists 6.8%. 6.8%. So when Taylor Swift, and this is why it really annoys me, the record labels are co-opting Taylor Swift. When Taylor Swift says, well, I'm not going to be on Spotify, I get so little. It's not Spotify you need to complain to, Taylor. Your label's stealing from you, as they have ever since God invented record labels.
Well, those percentages might be a bit different for Taylor Swift. I'm sure she has a different deal with her with her label, surely. But the point does remain that she will always be getting a fraction of a percent.
Yeah, maybe she has a better contractual relationship. But the point is, we don't care about Taylor Swift per se. We care about the music industry and musician. Actually, we don't care about the music industry. We care about musicians as listeners. We want to make sure that they make a living and continue to create great music for us. And it's pretty clear from day one, the record labels have not been the best way to do it. And thank goodness, there's the internet. You don't need your label anymore. These guys are just trying to rip you off. And for that, it seemed so appalling, this speech that they gave and got these artists going, yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to go to Congress to make sure that our crap business model is protected.
So who are they saying that to? Like,
well, that's what's annoying. Who's watching the Grammys?
Yeah.
They're listeners, the fans, the people who love music.
It's like, don't listen to our music, you buy scum. Our music. You don't want to buy it? Well, then
you
there you go.
Scum.
That's ridiculous.
We're going to make sure Congress protects us from you, you scum. All right. I'm sorry. I got a little heated there.
You're speaking truth to power to them directly to the man.
That's right.
That's why we respect you.
You got to fight the powers that be. Swift is doing all right. Is doing all right. Apparently, it is being widely adopted. And a number of big companies, American Airlines, Duolingo, Getty Images, have all taken to Swift. Say their development productivity has gone up. There are fewer bugs in apps. It's interesting because Swift is still not done. In fact, they just gave us a new version of Swift that adds additional features. It's in beta. But it looks like Swift was perhaps the right thing to do. You've seen, we showed this graph from Red Monk before, as Swift moves up the popularity. The x-axis on this is popularity on GitHub. The y-axis is Stack Overflow conversations. And you see it's actually pretty linear. It's interesting. And Swift is right up there. Still Objective-C is still more popular, but Swift has been moving up very, very rapidly. We should have mentioned this last week. I know iMore wrote about it. Stanford has released, they do every year, they do an incredible iTunes U course on developing for iOS, their newest version, developing iOS 8 apps with Swift. And it's free on iTunes U. According to Red Monk, adoption of Swift has been essentially unprecedented. And if you are a Swift developer, you probably already have the new Xcode, which delivers the newest version of Swift to you. So I find this fascinating because it's a language that you can only use to develop for iOS.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's very narrow right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's kind of incredible that Apple basically put its foot down and said, you know what? We're going to create our own language for iOS. We are that certain that that Objective-C is over and done. I mean, Objective-C is really just built on top of C.
Right.
So being able to tear that all down and say, all right, we're going to start from scratch and we're going to build a clean, simple language. And, you know, I am not a hardcore iOS developer. I have one test project in Swift, so I can't say much about whether it's an easier language to use than Objective-C. But I mean, from statistically, it seems like people seem to be digging it. And the documentation on the language, both the free stuff available from Apple and the stuff that Stanford's putting together, is really fantastic for people who want to learn.
Yeah. Compiler improvements in Swift 1.2, more stable, faster. I didn't know this, but you couldn't do incremental builds before, which is kind of a for most developers, a must to Swift to speed up the code compile run cycle. You only in the past, I guess, had to recompile everything. Now you only recompile files that have changed. Executables are running faster. In fact, Apple's claiming, and I haven't seen anybody dispute this, that Swift runs much faster than Objective-C, which is great. Considering it's kind of an interpreted language, and there's some new features that they're adding. And this is one of the things that some experts have said, well, I don't want to adopt a language that isn't set, you know.
Daniel Jalkut said that on Twitter, like, I'm going to stroll in when Swift 2.0 is out, say, nice looking language you got there, and then move along with my business.
Yeah.
All developers, they usually have like a really wide range of tools that they work with. They're not just master one language. They master a whole bunch of languages. And when you put something, I've been talking to a lot of them about Swift, and they, a lot of them are really, really interested in it because they like the way they like its attitude towards development. A lot of them are like, I can either spend X hours of the week learning this brand new language, or I could spend X hours writing software. And I'd much rather be writing software than doing that.
Silver is apparently a cross-platform compiler for Swift that will allow you to write Android and the hotly demanded Windows Phone apps. I don't think
they're down Windows quite phone. Enough. I think you can still kick them a little bit more.
I'm sorry.
It's a lovely phone. It's a lovely.
I love it. I love my 1520. I'm just frustrated because I would love to see. You know, I can't use it because Google just has decided to kill it. Personally, you know, just put it out of its end. So, Silver is a Swift language front end for the Elements compiler. ElementsCompiler.com. So I don't know how well it works. It's not out yet. Beta's coming. Does not support Cocoa for Touch, which is a little odd.
I think it's interesting to see how well this is going to progress. Well, Apple has a certain amount of a lot of control over their developers because because the App Store is the only vector for deploying software.
Right.
So they could at some point say that, yeah, we're not going to let you deploy your software unless it supports these APIs. And so there's always that possibility that after Swift gets off the ground, they could say 2, 3, 4, 5 years later that, okay, now we are not going to be accepting any app that is not written in Swift. I don't know how they would enforce that, but it's just another note about how interesting the relationship between Apple and its developers are right now.
If you take a look, you want to take a look at a Swift app, the Getty Images has released something called Stream, an app for iOS and OS X written in Swift. It lets you search the Getty Images portfolio. That's pretty cool. I think this is exciting. American Airlines is using it for their app, which is part of Passbook. And both of these shops did a lot of Objective-C coding. LinkedIn is using Swift in its SlideShare app. So that's Duolingo. I love Duolingo. Their Test Center, which is a companion app, is written in Swift.
I'm surprised to see this amount of adoption in companies of this size.
Yeah.
This quickly, too.
That's
a good sign.
Like, if you're saying, Bob, the guy who makes the app for checking your car location, is using it. Like, sure he is. He's given it a go. But for it to be used by large companies right now, especially, is it American Airlines? Like, that's the American Airlines app. Like, all of the other companies, like, it's a companion app.
Right.
Like, no, this is, like, the full-on, this is the app, the only app we have. Like, it's quite a big bet. I mean, I wonder if maybe Apple's been in their ear a little bit. You know, do us a favor, maybe. We'll let you look at the Apple Watch a little bit early or something, but whatever the reasons why they're doing it, it's very interesting that they are.
Finally, Danny Boyle's Steve Jobs biopic. We know we've talked last week. It's been shooting in Cupertino at the Flint Center. Now has been given a release date for fall of this year. Aaron Sorkin wrote it. Michael Fassbender plays Steve Jobs, Seth Rogen, Steve Wozniak. It will, open October 9th, but be careful because Kidnap with Halle Berry is going to open, Buena Vista's Coast Guard film The Finest Hours with Chris Pine, and Warner Brothers' hotly anticipated Vacation reboot all on October 9th. So no, I think it'll do all right. That's exciting. I can't wait to see it, and I can't wait to pan it. If it doesn't live up to our high standards.
I think we have to put, we'll have to put the comic book guy filter on all of our microphones to say, first of all, Steve Wozniak did not. In 1976, Steve Wozniak was still part-time employee at Hewlett Packard. He should not still have his VW micro bus because it was sold in 1975.
By the way, Chevy Chase, no, is not in the National Lampoon Vacation reboot. I'm sorry. Actually, maybe he should have like a bit part, like the gas station attendant, so that, you know, you could go, oh, that's Chevy.
He could be like the stumble bum Jean-Louis Gasset.
Oh, Glenn says he is. Glenn, he is, huh? He's not going to be the lead, though.
No, he plays Clark.
He plays Clark.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. That's
Rusty Griswold grown up and taking his kids.
Rusty Griswold takes his kids on a vacation. So Grandpa Clark is still around.
And Beverly D'Angelo's in it also.
And Beverly D'Angelo is still in it. She's grandma.
Yes.
Wow. I'm glad they stayed together because it was a little hit or miss for a while there.
Vegas vacation.
Yeah. The Vegas vacation. Right? Right? Who can forget? P.S. Chops says the vacation reboot will definitely out-earn the Jobs movie. Yeah, there's a lot. All of a sudden, the chat room is going crazy about the vacation movie. Maybe they're right. That's where dividing the nerd vote is a very risky thing to do.
That'll be a great topic for discussion. Do we think that the Steve Jobs movie is better because it got more market share or because it generated more revenue?
We'll have more with our guests from Relay.fm, Mike Hurley, Serenity Caldwell from iMore.com, and, of course, Annie Anako from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today, as always, brought to you by our good buddies at Personal Capital. Personal Capital is a very cool idea. In fact, I found out about it when I interviewed their founder, Bill Harris. It's got to be more than 2 years ago now on Triangulation. Actually, Bill and I are going to have dinner on Friday. I'm looking forward to seeing him. A clever idea. They decided that there should be a better way to keep track of your investments. You know, because we're all, you know, we have lots of different accounts for our money. You know, our bank account, our credit card account, our investment accounts, our mortgage. They're all on different web pages, hard to figure out. So the first thing Personal Capital did, which I think is great, is put together this great financial dashboard, which is absolutely free, by the way. You go there, take you a few minutes to sign up, and now you have a single page that tells you exactly where you stand. You can use it for budgeting, but you can also use it to keep track of your retirement, whether you're paying too much in mutual fund fees or 401k fees. That's actually shaving years off your retirement. It's really useful, and it's absolutely free. And then they've added now, which is so great, you can get financial investment advice as well from their registered investment advisors. And this is a great service, too. If you're eligible, they're going to offer you an additional $100 for every $100,000 you deposit in an investment account at Personal Capital, up to $10,000 cash in your pocket. So you get wealth management, both passive management, where you watch on the screen, and if you wish, active management. Schedule your free one-on-one investment consultation with Personal Capital today. This is a limited-time offer, so do it now. With their award-winning financial app, you'll be able to monitor your income, your spending, the performance of your investments in real time on a single, easy-to-read screen. That's absolutely free. And then you can also invest smarter using advice from their registered investment advisors. It's really great. Highly recommended. I've been very happy, and I know you will too. Go to personalcapital.com right now, personalcapital.com/MacBreak. Set up your free account. And for a limited time, if you qualify, Personal Capital will give you $100 for every $100,000 you deposit, up to $10,000. That's personalcapital.com/MacBreak. We love them, and we know you will too. Andy Anako, your pick of the week, my friend. Oh, Andy, you're muted.
Hello, Andy.
Sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
I had to leave the room to get my pick, which was in my laptop bag because I use it so much. It's the Compass 2 iPad stand by 12 South, which has been around for a while. I came late to the church of the Compass 2, the Compass stand, because it was a $40 thing, and I was so burned out on iPad stands because between stuff that I get sent and stuff that I bought, it's like I've got a stand for every dish that I've got in the entire, you know, kitchen. But, oh, man, is this just a beautifully put together object where when it's folded up, it is this really heavy, like, steel sort of object. But then when you unfold it, it turns into this and then this and then this. And it becomes this absolutely rock steady stand that is both beautiful and also won't wobble. It won't tear or anything like that. It also has a really clever design where you can flip out this kickstand right here and actually use it flat like that so that it holds it at a comfortable typing angle. And then when you're done, it just does it folds down to absolutely nothing. It even comes in with this nice little like a padded case, which you can also use to clean your iPad screen with. It's not the cheapest stand by any measure. They knew you can buy the original Compass for about $20 now. The new model is adjustable, so it works with the iPad mini as well, and that's $40. But boy, if I had had one of these in my hands like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I definitely would have just bought it because it's just a beauty. You have such an appreciation for a beautiful object. I mean, earlier in the show, I said that I think that the iPad Air 2 is like the prettiest and the most Apple-esque device that that Apple has ever made, and maybe the most beautiful tech object on sale right now. You kind of feel like you want to spend the extra $20 or $25 for a stand that's just as beautiful, and it is so small that you can just toss this into any case that you have, and you'll never be without it. So. High recommendation. I love it. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to buy a second one so that it's there. For me, like the highest recommendation I can give something for an object like this is that not only do I use it all the time, do I buy ones for both my iPad bag and for my laptop bag so that I want to make sure I never have to like be without it no matter what I'm leaving the house with. And this definitely passes that test.
You know what else I like about it? It would work with almost any size iPad. So you can use the current iPad Air and Retina Mini. Yeah. But if they came out with a 12-inch, it'd probably work, right?
Yeah, and it works with everything. I've got a bunch of tablets around the office like for testing at any given time, and anything it'll work for a cookbook, it'll work for pretty much everything you've got going. It'll work as a picture frame, maybe a pretty expensive stand for picture frame, but it's just so flexible for so many
purposes. $40.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can get the old one for $20, and it's just not as useful for an iPad Mini as the new one is. But either way, high recommendation.
I'm looking only going to buy iPad accessories that will fit a 12.9-inch iPad.
This could actually be like you could be an MGM 1935 movie like Ice Pick Murderer with this. I have the feeling that if they can keep the weight of the next iPad under 90 pounds, this will be able to support the weight of the next whatever larger iPad may or may not be coming.
I love it. Mike, do you have a pick for us? I want to pick Relay.fm because you go there. And you hear shows. How many shows do you do?
Oh, me personally, I think like 6 or 7. Yeah. Something like that. I'll stay to that.
Oh, you're a punter.
We have a couple of others.
I do 12 a week. Get going. Get to work. You young people today, I tell you.
I just sleep in.
And it's not just tech. I mean, like I said, pens, which is awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
We have gaming and tech, and we're trying to move into pop culture now as well. So
love it.
Yeah, we got a long road ahead. But I do have a pick, Leo.
Yes. There it is. The latest shiny, happy people, the pen addict.
Indeed.
It's a Twisby. Go ahead. Your pick of the week.
My pick, we've spoken a few times about like services that I can't get access to.
How do you get access to those services?
I use a great, in a completely different topic.
Yes.
I use an app called Cloak for secure browsing.
Secure browsing.
Via using VPN. So Cloak is a great Mac and iOS app. And basically what it does is it allows you to secure your connection via VPN, but it also allows you to spoof your location for, I don't know why you'd do that, but you could do it if you wanted to. It has a really great app on the Mac, which is a menu bar app, and it has a great app on the iPhone, which has to do some complicated things with installing some like profiles, but it has a really good way of talking you through how you do that and like how you then activate the VPN in iOS settings. It has really good pricing. So they have monthly plans that start at like $2.99 a month, but they also have what I really like is passes. So you can buy a week, a month, or a year. So maybe you need to watch a sporting event or something like that. You can buy just like a week pass, which is like, I think like $3 or $4, something like that. They can be either bought on their site or bought in the app via an app purchase. I've used a bunch of these types of apps in the past, and I think Cloak is the easiest one to use, especially with its companion iOS apps. You set up an account and your pass goes between both devices. I'm a big fan of it. And considering Netflix just added all of Friends in the US, it's very useful for me at the moment.
my daughter, who is 23 and never saw Friends, has actually, I think, now gone off. How many? Eight? Nine seasons?
I think it's like 10.
10?
Isn't that something like that? Could be more.
She started watching number one. I said, my God, they were young. All right, Mike. And thank you, by the way, for being here. I really appreciate it. I know it's like 3 in the morning in England, so no, it's not.
It's not too bad.
It's like 8 o'clock, right? 8 or 9.
Yeah, it's like 8, 9 o'clock. No, I really appreciate the invite.
But is QI on right now? Because I don't want you to miss it.
There's a channel in the UK called Dave where QI is basically on all day.
Oh, oh. I can't wait to give up Jeopardy and start watching QI instead.
It's all on YouTube. There's so much QI on YouTube.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's not official, but there's like a horde of people that put those things on there. Every episode is on YouTube.
Oh, so illegal. That's so good. Serenity Caldwell from iMore.com. What do you got for us today?
Today, I don't have it in hand, unfortunately, but I am still going to espouse its greatness regardless. That's a 10-1 Designs Mountie. Which has a very strange name. It's not Canadian. This is a weird little gadget that attaches your phone or your iPad your laptop. So I laughed out loud when I saw this the first time. I was like, really? This looks, especially because they show it with HBO Go. And I'm like, okay, so you're going to be watching television while you're working.
Yeah.
But you know what? All right.
But you could have a Twitter stream in there, or messages actually would be good in
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Yeah. Messages, if you use something like Duet Display, you can turn your iPad into a secondary display.
Yeah, we love Duet.
Yeah, exactly. What I really love doing, actually, is using that with my MacBook Air and then sitting on, like, a couch or a chair. It's so ridiculous looking, but it works.
It could
works
be a rear view mirror if you put the camera, a selfie camera on, you'd know who's over your shoulder.
Yeah, watch for any suspicious characters.
I get really worried. Looking at those images, it really worries me that it's going to like completely ruin the center of balance. Does it do that? Does it affect like the way that the laptop's balanced? Like especially on Air, I imagine you just poke it and the entire thing flips over.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, on an 11-inch Air with an iPad Mini in landscape and an iPad Air in landscape, if you tilt the Air's hinge all the way back, it tends to rock a little bit. With an iPhone, it's no problem. And that's only an 11-inch Air. I tested it with a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and it was rock solid.
Do you have to buy a different Mountie depending? One Mountie fits all, it looks like.
One Mountie fits all. They have, actually, I do have the little rubber pieces there.
I think this is so, and I love 10-1 Design. They really are a cool company. They've done
that. So you can see. Yeah, these little rubber pieces just snap in, and then you just switch out whichever rubber piece you need for whichever iOS device you have. It's cool, especially if you're sitting on the couch. I did not realize how many times I lost my iPhone or needed my iPhone, and I was like sitting on it or somewhere elsewhere when I was working remotely until I attached it to my computer, and I'm like, oh, this is actually really useful. This is really functional. And on airplanes too. I used it on a flight back from Las Vegas, and I found that it was perfect.
Just hanging over the tray table of the person next to you. Don't mind that.
Well, I did it in portrait, so not so much with the lengthy as the long. But yeah,
I'm really lying. This is the second thing I've bought now. Andy's stand, and I'm buying this clip. And what I like is they're all one size fits all. So I can just clip anything to my Air. I bet this would work. Have you tried it with a 5K iMac? That's thin enough, maybe.
Yeah. Not with a 5K, but I have it. I've used it on the 21-inch. It does.
Wow.
Not as well as it does with a Mac. It's a little bit weird with the rubber, but it still holds it just fine.
I'm buying it right now.
Try clipping the Air to the side of the iMac.
You're insane. You're a madman.
It's probably wise for you to buy a second like iPad Mini just to balance it out. You know,
one on each side, like giant also, iPad Mini ears.
You have sort of like a dead mouse effect, you know, going on.
Jeez.
Just for added security, not because you just want to. You have an older iPad Mini and you want to buy a new iPad Mini. It's just prudent.
We should just have. You should do, Serenity, a series of articles for iMore and things you can clip to things using a Mountie. I just ordered one myself. That sounds so cool. You know, the idea of doing a FaceTime. The only person I FaceTime with is my mom. But it's always a problem because really I want to do other things when I'm talking to mom. So like she says, why aren't you looking at me? Oh, sorry, mom. I was distracted. Look at me. So now I can clip the phone or the iPad there and pretend to look at her while I'm surfing the net or watching my Netflix movie.
There you go.
Very good. Serenity Caldwell is so wonderful at imore.com. 8 feet of snow now. That's okay.
More like seven, but we might get eight by the end of this weekend. So
wow, I like the new poster you've got there with the Méliès movie, A Trip to the Moon.
Isn't it great? It's from Mondo. I think it's Mondo Tees. They're a company in Austin that does these limited poster prints. I got it at South by like 2 or 3 years ago, and I love it.
Love it.
It's so good.
Love it. One of the original probably the earliest sci-fi movie. I would guess.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. We want to thank you so much for being here, Mike. First time, not last time. Mike Hurley is co-founder of Relay.fm. He's on the Twitter at iMike, M-Y-K-E. I'll be following you as soon as the show ends.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in.
No, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
We'll have you back soon. Also, thanks to Andy Iannacco, a regular feature of this show. Always appreciate it. At Chicago Sun-Times, of course, and at Iannatko, I-H-N-A-T-K-O on the Twitter. I didn't do a pick today except for Relay FM, but I might mention that a number of people in the chat room and Jason Howell, too, have pointed out that Anki Drive, which is those cool little cars that I gave my son but he never took with him, so I have them, that you let you race around the track. They're smart. You control them with an iOS device. They are upgrading the tracks. Oh, no, there's an ad? Why would they put an ad on an ad? You shouldn't have an ad on an ad. There it is. You can now jump your Anki drives, your cars. I have four cars. I got the whole setup.
Does it work well, Leo?
Yeah, it works great. Henry just doesn't, you know, I don't, my son, he's just not grateful for all the wonderful things I have laid on him. So. This looks really cool. They have the original works great.
So what do you control, like the speed? Like,
yeah, but you also have power ups and things you could shoot and virtual shooting, and the cars know that you're shooting at them, and each car has its own abilities. It's kind of more like a video game made into a real slot car set, but there's no slots, of course, because it's all computer controlled. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Look at this. I can't wait to get this new track.
It's also the idea that you can race against other cars that are being controlled by the computer, that they have a sense of where all the other cars are on the track.
Yeah.
It's like you're seeing this formation riding, and it's kind of creepy in a good way to see that, oh, there's a ghost car that's trying to steer around me, even though, oh dear, that's interesting.
It's neat.
Can you drive them off like on slot car races? Like if you power them up too much, will they fly off the track?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. That's pretty cool.
It's like slot cars without the slots, basically. Yeah, it's reliving my childhood. So I'm keeping it, Henry. You're not getting it back. And I'm getting this track. That looks awesome. Awesome. Apple's stock at an all-time high went up $2.30 today. Thanks, chat room, for filling us in. An all-time high of $122.02. But Apple is doomed because...
because of the heat death of the universe, of course.
Yes, that's right.
At some point.
Entropy's going to get you. Also, investing $848 million, I think that's the number, to build a solar farm in Monterey, California. So Apple's busy, busy, busy. And we will give you the results of... I think some of this is coming from... Tim Cook's speech at the Goldman conference right now. He's speaking right now. Apple will partner with First Solar to build an $850 million solar energy farm in Monterey County, California. It'd be enough to power 60,000 homes. It's not their first. They already have two in North Carolina and one in Nevada. In fact, all of Apple's data centers, according to Cook, this is actually from his talk at the Goldman conference, are running on renewable energy. Wow. That not only spiked First Solar shares, it spiked Apple shares. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for Mac Break Weekly. A lot of fun, as always. We'll be back at next Tuesday and every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC, or as the Brits call it, our time.
the true time zone.
True time. We were talking to a group of Englanders a couple of weeks ago, and I said, "Well, it's BST," and they said, "No, that's summertime."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Well, what do you call?" Yeah, because we call our standard time ST in the U.S. I said, "Well, what do you call standard time?" They said, "Time."
It's Mean Time.
I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Greenwich Mean Time." Well, but that's like every that's our time. We're Greenwich. Yeah. So there's like no right now, British standard GMT. Time. There's no like,
because that would also be BST.
Yeah, I know, it's confusing. So you just call it GMT.
Yeah, GMT and British summertime.
Okay. Well, that's what time we always for all of our fans in the UK. That's why we always give out UTC times. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Now back to work, because you know what? Break time. It's over.